35 in La Liga. Joining me in the studio tonight are two regulars, Heath Chesters and Joe Walker. You all right, lads?
Hiya, mate. Good to be back.
Good.
Yeah, not too bad. My team are doing a little bit better recently, so it's all smiles at the minute.
Good. They've been doing...
Got the podcast curse on them.
Yeah, hopefully not.
Right, we'll jump straight into the action. And the first game we're going to look at on the show is Atletico Madrid v Barcelona. The Catalans, of course, crowned champions following Real Madrid's result a day before. Joe, we'll bring you in on this one because I know you watch this game. Atletico Madrid preparing for the Copa del Rey final on Friday night. Barcelona arrived in Madrid as champions. What did you make of the game?
It wasn't a great game. Goals were pretty scruffy. I think we can all agree that it wasn't, the football purist game, but it was entertaining nonetheless. I think one of the things that I got out from it is that although Atletico are preparing for the cup final and they did rest a couple of players, it was a pretty strong Atletico side against a fairly weak Barcelona side. Obviously, Messi played, but whether he's 100% fit or not is another question. Pinto was in goal. Adriano at centre-back. Alex Song even got a game. And, Alexis Sanchez getting on the score sheet as well, which, is the biggest surprise of them all, really, I guess. He scored not a horrific goal, but it wasn't a very nice goal to score. And I love the way that, he celebrated brilliantly and whipped the top off, which was just a classic one in a meaningless game. He scores a goal and he whips the top off, showing how pleased he is to score. I was pleased at that.
Joe, were you surprised to see a sort of full-strength Atletico side?
Well, yes and no, because there are two kind of sides to this argument, really. There's the argument you rest all your players and then you bring them back in for the cup final, or you keep a very strong team out, try and build a bit of momentum. And I think that's what Simeone was trying to do. I think, he thought he'd play a strong team. Can you imagine the confidence they'd take into the game with Real if they'd have managed to beat Barcelona? I think that was a big part in his thinking. I thought, I think he knew that Barcelona weren't going to be at full strength. He thought that his team might be able to get a result and then sort of be flying going into the cup final. Obviously didn't turn out like that. So it'd be interesting to see what actually happens when they do meet Real Madrid. But I wasn't surprised. He might have given a few more fringe players a chance, just maybe to let them stake their plates for the cup final. But, he didn't. And that's his prerogative and that's his choice. And obviously, Mr. Falcao getting on the score sheet as always is good news for Simeone. Obviously, a lot of speculation surrounding him at the minute, but it doesn't seem to have done him any harm on the pitch, and they'll hope he can carry on going into the match against Real.
As you said, Falcao opened the scoring, and then Alexis and a Gabby own goal won it for Barcelona, 2-1 in the end. Just touching on Falcao, there's a new story every week. We understand that he's reportedly agreed to join Monaco. What do you make of that? It's a bit surprising, isn't it?
It's a bit bizarre considering they were in the second division in France last year and have just been promoted to the first. They've got a Russian owner, I believe, who is kind of on a par wealth-wise with Roman Abramovich at Chelsea. So I don't think money is any object to them. They're obviously not going to be playing in Europe next season, which makes the transfer, firstly, it makes it viable because, all the financial fair play kind of thing, they won't get any kind of sanction because they won't be playing in European competition. But it's strange in the fact that Atletico Madrid will be in the Champions League next season. And if Falcao was going to go anywhere, you'd have thought it would have been to a fellow Champions League club, not to a newly promoted side in the French Ligue 1. But then, there's could be more than meets the eye. The conspiracy theorists are saying that Monaco are going to act as a holding club for Real Madrid. So it, it eases the blow on the Atletico fans for him to make his switch to the Bernabeu. Whether that's true or not, it only time will tell, really.
If that is the case, Joe, could it all backfire? Like you said, Falcao won't be playing in European competition next year. If he has a bad year, would Real Madrid turn around and want him?
Well, yeah, it's a tough one. I'd suspect he would, if he did go to Monaco on the premise that he was then going to join Real Madrid, I would suspect he would have had a contract signed with Real Madrid before he makes the move to Monaco, which kind of, you know, gets rid of anything that, you know, if he does have a bad season or gets a bad injury, then that might sort of absolve him from not being able to get his transfer through. I think that, firstly, he will score goals in Liga if he goes there, because it's not a very good league. It's, you know, it's sort of a level below the Spanish league, and Falcao, I think it was his 28th goal in La Liga this weekend. Yeah. So I don't think he'll have any problem scoring goals. I just think it would be a very strange career choice for him, considering he's at the peak of his powers and he has the pick of any number of clubs in Europe. But if he's that determined to go to Real Madrid, then I don't see why he couldn't just go to Real Madrid. It doesn't matter if he joins Real Madrid in 6 months or 12 months. If he joins Real Madrid, he's not going to be the most popular man at the Calderon, whatever happens. So he might as well just go straight there for me.
Superb. Heath, bringing you in, Barcelona 1-0 down in the game, made all three substitutions. Then Lionel Messi walks off the field. They go and score two. Do you think they've mishandled Messi's injury?
Possibly a little bit, but then obviously there's also pressure in that he's always seen as one of the key players, the magician. There was all the talk for a little while when Barca had a dip in form when he was injured, that still winning games, it has to be said. They're very reliant on Messi, but then whilst he was out, they picked up some good results as well, and the Spanish press sort of turned the tables around and said, oh, they can do without Messi. So it's difficult to say, but I mean, if he's been carrying a knock, you probably got to think it's partly the responsibility of the club, but partly perhaps pressure from the player himself to want to play. Yeah. Because if he's thinking of certain records, goal scoring records and feats, or participation in X amount of consecutive games with wins, etc., you could probably blame the player himself, because he might not be 100%, but perhaps is saying, "Yeah, I'm ready. I'm up for the game. I can play." And the coaching staff have gone with him on that decision, even though, you know, they might suspect it not being quite 100%, but obviously now the suggestions are that he's out for the last few games of the season. So he's going to get a good break now anyway, heading into pre-season, get back to full fitness and be raring to go for next season. But, you know, hopefully for him, it's a good opportunity for rest and recuperation, because what you've got to think with clubs like Barcelona, Real Madrid, although the top athletes in really, really good physical condition these days, when you've got teams playing anywhere between 50 and 60 games a season, I know people joke and say, oh, poor darlings on 200,000, 300,000 euros a week. It's a hard life. But the amount of training that these players put in to keep the physical condition at the peak, you know, it is a lot of stress on the body. And when you're playing that many games, training all the time intensely, you've got to manage the games of the players. So hopefully he'll get a chance to have a good rest and a break during the pre-season, and pick his fitness back up and be raring to go to play another 50-odd games or so next season.
Superb. Heath, we'll stay with you and we'll move on to Espanyol Real Madrid. Played the day before the Barcelona game. Real Madrid, of course, going into this one knowing that anything but a win would gift the Catalans the championship. They didn't put much effort into it, did they? Do you think they're just focused on the Copa del Rey now?
I think possibly so, yeah. it wasn't the best of Real Madrid performances. And like you say, I think they had a mind on the Copa del Rey. Even though they put out a very strong side, even though you've got players like Nacho, Morata, Carvalho had a game, Essien in central midfield. You know, there was a few players rested. Of course, Ronaldo wasn't. He played, but he came off later on in the game. So he was given a bit of a chance for a break as well. But I think, you know, they knew they weren't going to be winning the league. It's a lost cause, the fight for La Liga title. So it was more like a friendly type of outing to keep the team in shape, ready for the Copa del Rey and a chance for some of the fringe players. But I think what was most interesting was the same old treatment for Jose Mourinho after the game. Again, the Spanish media picking holes in every managerial decision he makes. I don't think any of us think he's going to be there at the end of the season, but there's no let up from the Spanish journos. And the exact words of Mourinho in response to repeated questions in the press room after the match about not selecting Pepe and leaving him completely out of the squad. It was basically he said, Pepe hasn't played for my decisions, and because I'm the manager, I don't have to justify anything over the selection of Pepe. Up to the day that I choose the team, the decisions are mine. Sometimes I'll explain the motives of my decisions for selections. Sometimes I don't want to. It's up to me. And on a Friday, I decide who plays, and that's it. They kept picking at him and kept picking at him, and in the end, obviously frustrated, he just simply said, you know, we've got a new La Liga champions. You know, Barcelona, you've got to congratulate, yet you lot are talking about one player. You know, last season you were talking about a fantastic La Liga in which we were the champions. Now's the moment to congratulate the new champions, and for journalists like yourselves to realise that they've deserved it. But no, you want to speak of one player. So again, Mourinho frustrated again in the press conference after the match, and there's still no let-up for him. It'll be interesting to see what happens after the Copa del Rey final, win, lose or draw. He's bound to get more stick again. But, you know, I don't think it matters to him anymore. You know, he's just been very, very stubborn and understandably so, because it must be frustrating getting to ask the same things week in, week out, from the same bunch of journalists that have all had it in for him all season. And I think he'd be off to pastures new, whether it's Paris Saint-Germain, whether it's Chelsea, we don't know as yet. But one thing's for certain, I really don't think he's going to be at Real Madrid come the end of the summer.
Heath, how do you think he's walking round the club now? Do you think he's a bit of a lonely man? You know, it's a year ago we were sort of, media was sort of talking that it was the Spanish players against the Portuguese players in the locker room, and Mourinho was with the Portuguese and the Brazilian players. But obviously this fallout with Pepe, who's from Portugal as well, he's just falling out with everybody, isn't he?
This part of it, you make your own bed. And I think what rubbed things the wrong way, perhaps with certain groups of or cliques of the players within the Real Madrid camp, I don't think there's many clubs who don't have certain little groups of friends within the squads, even though it might not look that way on the pitch. But obviously everything with Real Madrid is amplified 10 times more than anybody else, and anything that's said or done in training, off the pitch or an off-the-cuff comment is often blown out of all proportions, and that hasn't helped things for Jose Mourinho. You know, some of the decisions that might be a word in the ear of a player that any other manager at any other club might have sort of leaked out into the press, I think part of the problem for Mourinho was obviously his insistence in having control. And that's probably an important thing to bear in mind with Real Madrid, because normally perhaps the managers have been more of a figurehead, and it's the board that assigning all the players, choosing the signings. Mourinho's perhaps had more of an input of that in his time and shaping his team. Obviously, his coaching staff, he's shaped completely himself. And that's probably why, even though he was one of the favourites to get the Man United job for a very long time, and hints from Alex Ferguson even, ultimately that's why he's not got the Man United job, because they've built their own backroom staff, and David Moyes slots into that. Whereas Mourinho would probably have his demands if he went to Manchester United. So when things haven't worked out for him this season, when they've had the bad runs, they've not played so well, it's sort of dominoed. You've had the pressure from him having total control and total responsibility, the press needling him about that. You've had fallouts in amongst the players and the groups, so they've been needling him about that, and it's just gone from bad to worse for him. So I think there's some of it, you know, you make your bed, you've got to lie in it, from his part, but also you can understand his frustration, like I said, from the sort of relentless nature of the pressure from the media in Spain, and there's nothing quite like it. I mean, coming from the UK, you think the Fleet Street crowd and the tabloid press are very tough on the players, but by comparison, they've got absolutely nothing on the pressure from the Spanish media, and especially for clubs like Barcelona and Real Madrid. And, you know, the man we know in the UK as the darling of the media, Jose Mourinho, he's had to suffer here in Spain. But I think this is the end of his tenure now. I don't think he'll be coming back to Spain in a hurry. And I don't think he'll be looking back over his shoulder either.
Superb. Joe, bringing you in, just on a couple of possible ins and outs at Real Madrid. Heath's just gone into good detail there about their season and Jose Mourinho. Mourinho leaving this summer, it looks like now. Is it Carlo Ancelotti coming in, do you think?
It looks like that, doesn't it? Certainly. PSG's president has come out and publicly said that Real Madrid have asked for permission to speak to Ancelotti, or certainly inquired about the Italian's availability, and that was kind of rebuffed. They said he's got another year to go on his contract and we expect him to fulfil it. Obviously making all the right noises in public, but I expect privately that deal is pretty much done. If you look at any sort of Spanish paper, Marca or AS, they're both convinced that it's going to be Carlo Ancelotti. He is apparently sort of long been in the eyes of Real Madrid, and he was very close to taking over before he took over at AC Milan, we're led to believe too. So it's kind of, he should have, it's like, it's kind of, I'm trying to think of an analogy. It's like a girl you've always fancied who then goes away and comes back after a few years and you finally get with her. That's the only way I can put it. It's a kind of long standing flirting, and eventually they're going to sort of be married, and hopefully it, you know, for Real Madrid's sake, it'll be happily ever after, because there's one thing for sure that it was with Jose Mourinho, and that wasn't it wasn't the happiest of times at the club, even though they did set a new points record in La Liga, and obviously they're gonna more than likely win the Copa del Rey this week too, so it's not been all that bad. They got to three Champions League semi-finals. Yes, he was brought in to win the Champions League, and he's ultimately not done that, but he has got to three semi-finals. He's been very unlucky in a couple of them, and he was just outplayed by Dortmund, although they almost scraped themselves back into it a couple of weeks ago. So, yeah, I don't think he's been an unmitigated disaster, as he's being painted out to be, but I do think he's on his way out, and I do think that Mr. Ancelotti will be coming in through the door.
Just...
I love that analogy. Then that begs for a marker headline. That does. Florentin Perez caught with his hand in Paris Saint-Germain's knickers.
Heath, I'm glad you're coming because I was going to ask you about Wayne Rooney. I know you've got a bit of a thing for Man United. Transfer requests in this week: a reported 40 million euro bid from Real Madrid. What do you make of that?
My personal opinion is that there's too much going on off the field for Wayne Rooney. It's time to sell him, and you know, the bigger the price they can get for him, the better, because obviously I think United will be looking players like Lewandowski. Obviously you've got Pep Guardiola at Bayern Munich that's interested in Rooney as well, apparently. The word on the grapevine is, according to various sources in the media, is that Bayern Munich's representatives have already been talking with Rooney's representatives. Obviously now, Florentin Perez, perhaps, to perhaps appease the Real Madrid fans post Jose Mourinho era, is perhaps looking at a big name signing, another Galactico, if you will. And obviously, Wayne Rooney's a big name in the world of football. You can't knock still what he's done at Manchester United in the last couple of seasons, Wayne Rooney. But I think, personally, he's a player that it would suit Manchester United and it would suit him to be off somewhere else now.
Just to jump in there, the new era
at Man United. Yeah.
Just that, whilst I've heard all this, you know, the speculation and read quite a lot about it, I can't see him going to Bayern Munich because I don't, you know, if you look at the team that Pep Guardiola had, you know, they work so, so hard and they press so hard and the football they kind of play with the false nine. I don't know if Wayne Rooney would fit in at Bayern Munich at all. And I don't know if he'd fit in at Madrid. You know, that's never stopped them signing a player before and then kind of just saying to the manager, here you go, make it work. That's never stopped them before. But I don't know if he'd fit in at either club. You know, Manchester United would never let... You know,
I think a lot depends on with Pep Guardiola, what sort of system he uses at Bayern Munich.
Well, nobody knows,
because
that
I don't think there's any sort of guarantees he's going to do exactly the same sort of thing as Barcelona, because he hasn't got the Barcelona players to do that.
I can
see Rooney more in Germany than I can in Spain.
I can't actually see him that way, but I can't see him going abroad. I think that Manchester United want to sell him, and I think they're very right to sell him because they've had they've milked him for every last drop that they could get out of him, to use another one of my famous analogies. They've had absolutely everything that they could have possibly got out of Wayne Rooney. He has no more to offer Manchester United. If they can get the same back that they paid for him, I think they'd do very well, because Wayne Rooney over the last 12 to 18 months hasn't been worth, you know, £30 million, €37 million, which is the kind of price that they paid for him. So I think they'd do very well to get the money back for him. And I actually think if he goes anywhere, he'll stay in England. I could imagine him going to Chelsea is quite a heavy rumour at the minute. Apparently, Jose Mourinho's always wanted to work with Rooney. Don't know, thinks he might be able to mould him into a sort of Drogba-type character there. They are looking for a new striker as well, Chelsea, because they have a Spanish ghost up front at the minute. So I think that I could see...
You can only picture a certain, for the sort of prices that they're bandying about, you can only picture a certain few clubs, and he's been rumoured with all of them, is Manchester City, Chelsea in England, Paris Saint-Germain with their millions. Obviously, you've got Real Madrid and Barcelona have both been linked with him in the last few years, and Bayern Munich in Germany. Obviously, the only other clubs that could perhaps match the financial clout of any of those with offers of wages and transfer fees are one or two of the Russian clubs. But can you see Wayne Rooney in Russia?
Yeah, Russia or Turkey. I don't think so.
So I think it's any of those big moneyed clubs, the big giants financially at the moment that he's going to go to. I can't personally see him in Spain though.
Superb.
I don't know why. I just can't see him. Yeah.
Superb. But we'll wait and see where he ends up. We're going to end part one there. And when we come back in part two, we're going to take a look at all the teams involved in the relegation battle and those fighting for a place in Europe. Welcome back to the Inside Spanish Football Podcast. We've looked at Atletico Madrid and Barcelona and Espanyol and Real Madrid. Just to touch quickly on two games, Malaga versus Sevilla. This was a bit of a bore draw, 0-0. Apparently 20 scouts from 20 different European teams came to watch this one. But Joe, they didn't get to see much, did they?
I'm trying to think of anything positive to say about it. It was two clean sheets from a defensive point of view. that's probably about all I could have to think about it. The scouts would have probably been left scratching their heads wondering what they'd actually gone to see and who they'd gone to see. They thought they might have turned up at, you know, they might have turned, they were like, oh, we turned up at the B team game here. Because it had a very, you know, meaningless end of season smell to it, didn't it, almost?
Sevilla are doing all right though, aren't they? They've improved a little bit, and they've got themselves in that eighth place now. And obviously, if Malaga are still banned, they'll be in the Europa League. That's turned out okay for them, hasn't it, after a bit of an inconsistent season?
Yeah, it looked as if they were going to be struggling this season at one point, but they've turned things around. I think in their last sort of eight games, they've only lost twice to Atletico and to Levante. And, you know, they've had a couple of good wins and they've drawn a few games. They probably draw too many games, to be honest, for the calibre of squad that they've got. But they're on a decent run of form. You say they've got themselves into eighth position, which you wouldn't have thought they would have done this time, say, 2 months ago. So they're looking kind of nailed on almost to get that eighth. And if Malaga don't get to Europe, to get that final European berth, which would be a huge boost to them, because I know you don't get a lot of money for playing in the Europa League, but it might help them given their financial difficulties. They might be able to hold on to, you know, Negredo might be able to offer him a little bit more money or incentive to stay on, although I think there'll be a lot of interest in him from around Europe. But it will help them a lot if Malaga don't get in to the European competitions.
Heath, Malaga, two main talking points this week that continue to burden them, really. Pellegrini and Isco, their futures, much talked about. Pellegrini to Man City and Isco looking like he'll join him.
Well, that's the big news this week, mainly with Pellegrino. And with Isco, obviously there's been a lot of clubs being linked with Isco because he's had such a fantastic season and he's come on as such a cracking young player. He's got to be one of the top summer targets for any of the big clubs around Europe this summer. So it's not going to be any surprise if he moves on, unless, like a lot of the players at Malaga at the minute, they can get guarantees that things are going to change off the field at the club. And I think that's going to be the biggest issue. I think a lot is going to hinge on how they get on with the court for arbitration for sport, for competing in European football next season. That may indicate what sort of support that Al Thaini puts into the club. There's a lot of ifs and buts, and I don't think any of the players or the coaching staff are happy with that. So with what they've had to sort of put up with off the field this season, with the turbulence that's carried on from the summer. I don't blame Pellegrino one bit for you know, thinking, well, my future is going to be better somewhere else where I might get a bit more stability. Whether he'll get that at City out of the frying pan into the fire, I don't know. as for Isco, obviously, again, a few clubs being rumoured for him. City obviously have got the financial clout to bid straight away for his release clause. If there's a transfer battle in the summer for him, because I think Manchester United have also been admirers of him for a long time, you wouldn't put it past perhaps Real Madrid perhaps putting an offer in for him, or Paris Saint-Germain. Again, we're talking about these big financial clout clubs that we were talking about for Wayne Rooney as well. So I think there's going to be some big deals, and there's going to be some big changes, you know, depending on the European future for Malaga in the summer. It'll be a shame to see this team break up, because they've done exceptionally on the field this season. And when you would look at a club that's done as well as they have on the field in the last two seasons, you would be thinking that they would be building on that. But it just seems to be crumbling apart, down to a lot of bad organisation off the field. Recent weeks for Malaga, this was the latest in a run of three games without a win now. It's looking like a team that's completely demoralised, and is just sort of going through the motions now to the end of the season. And it's a shame to say, and especially so for the Malaga fans, because although they've had a fantastic roller coaster ride in the last two seasons, with the finish in La Liga the other season, the European campaign this season, it's a shame for a club that's got fans that have had to suffer, you know, the change in name of the club when they were CD Malaga in the 90s, and they folded and Malaga CF came to be, you know, playing in the lower divisions in Spanish football. Now they've got here, it'd be a shame for them, because they're a fantastic bunch of supporters, to see, you know, it all go to pot again. But unfortunately, that seems to be the way it's going.
Superb. In terms of players coming in then, do you think there'll be many coming in?
I think it's going to be a busy old summer at Malaga, a very busy summer. You're probably going to see, you know, if Althaini's deciding to cut the cloth a bit more, and especially if they're not playing in Europe, then some of the big earners were probably going to be on their way, as the club try and balance the books, because obviously don't forget they don't get the same sort of financial returns from the television money at the likes of Real Madrid and Barcelona, even though, you know, there's still the murmurings of a more balanced deal. It's one of those things that we'll see it when we believe it in La Liga. The clubs can't plan on a maybe. They know what sort of level of money they're getting at the minute from the television, and they've got to plan accordingly to that. And obviously the Champions League is a massive, massive influx of money that helps bolster and balance the books for, you know, keeping the biggest stars at your club. And if you're not going to be playing in the Champions League, then you can't balance the books and pay the sort of wages that you need to keep those players. Insofar as changes, we've chatted recently about who we'd see in terms of players. It's so difficult to say. You know, I think there's probably going to be a number of free agent players or players whose contracts have expired, is going to be the sort of market where they're going to be fishing. In terms of managers, we both talked about this before, Ben, when we said, who do you think is going to be the next Malaga manager? And we both sort of came up with Joaquin Caparrós. He's Andaluz. And for me, you know, he'd probably be quite happy to slot in with whatever's going on at Malaga. And I think he'd probably do a good job. But it's going to be a different type of job to that which Pellegrini's been doing in the last 2 years. A more modest sort of job. But nonetheless, I think he's perhaps the most ideal candidate that Malaga are perhaps going to be looking for. But it's so difficult to say at the minute because there's so many ifs and buts still.
Brilliant. We'll move on to Rayo Vallecano versus Valencia. Joe, we'll just quickly touch on this one and then we'll move on to the teams involved in the relegation battle. Valencia trying to catch Real Sociedad, aren't they, for that fourth place Champions League spot. And this was a great result for them, wasn't it? 4-0.
Yeah, they absolutely thumped them, yeah, away from home as well, which was all the more impressive. They're now level on points with Sociedad, although they have an inferior head-to-head record, which would go against them if they both finish level on points. It's quite strange, really, because I have said on this pod before, not wanting to, you know, pat myself on the back, but I did say I thought Valencia, that their squad is good enough to get into the Champions League, and it's the best out of the chasing pack. We've seen it whittled down to two now, and Sociedad are starting to get a bit nervous and twitchy. I'm sure Heath was pretty pleased about that last night. I saw his live tweeting. He seemed a happy chappy, although a lucky chappy by all accounts as well. But Valencia, yeah, Now they're in a good run of form. They can do it. They have an easier run-in, I believe, than Sociedad as well, which is only going to go to help them. They've got Getafe on Saturday, then Granada, potential banana skin there, eh, Heath? And then they've got...
Well, it's made me laugh because Granada have now played Malaga, taken points off them, taken points off Real Sociedad, and they've got Valencia to play. So, you know, even though we're not challenging for European football ourselves, we could have quite a big hand in who gets there in that Champions League place.
Yeah.
We'll move on to Real Sociedad and Granada because, of course, Real Sociedad in that fourth spot at the moment. But it does look like, with form in the last two games, Valencia are going to snatch it off them at the death. Joe, just touching on Sociedad before we move on to Heath, who was at this game. The last couple of results, they've dropped a little bit, haven't they?
Yeah, they were, you know, it's to be expected. They were on a fabulous run, weren't they? I don't think they'd lost a game in 2013 until they lost to Getafe last week, had they? So that was sort of 15 games. They're on, you know, almost championship-winning form since the turn of the year. And eventually, that's going to have to come to an end, isn't it? And they're still only one defeat in their last... however many games, you know, they haven't gone on a losing streak now of three or four games. They've only lost the one game. They, by all accounts, should have won last night, but didn't. That's the main thing. No one remembers the teams that should do stuff. They look like they might be, I don't know, they might lack the experience to just get over the line, given that it would be their kind of debut in the Europe's Premier competition. They've got a young, very young team as well who lack a bit of experience. Valencia, obviously, been there, done that. They've got themselves to the Champions League knockout stages countless times. And you can see how much that it means to them. So it's quite an interesting one with Sociedad, whether it's just that they've got a small squad, they can't really rotate that much. Their first 11 is very good, but is their squad that good? I don't know.
As good as Champions League football would have been for them, Europa League football's going to be just as good, isn't it?
Yeah, Europa League, you know, we have this inferiority complex in Britain, don't we, that Europa League, what's that all about? But funnily enough, on the continent, teams actually want to win it, and they like it. And I think it'd be good for them. It's obviously they're as a club, they're building to become a bigger, better club as well. You know, they've exceeded all expectations so far this year. In Vela, they've got, you know, a little gem from Arsenal. Whether he stays or not will be another question, because I believe Arsenal have a clause to sign him back, although I don't know if they'd sign him back given that they've had him for so many years and he hasn't really made any impact there. I think that they'll be looking to keep hold of him. Aguirreche has been standout player this season as well for them, hasn't he? Xabi Prieto as well, although he's getting on a bit. Those three players are very crucial to them. If they can build around the solid base that they've got a decent squad there, but they need to make it bigger. And I think if they do get in the Europa League, they will have, you know, they won't have the kind of top shelf players, but they'll have their pick of the sort of the best of the rest, if you like, if they can get enough money together to make a couple of signings or play the loan market or play the free transfer market cleverly, they could be right up there in the top four next season as well.
Brilliant. You're sitting there patiently. Great result for your boys, wasn't it?
It was obviously a good slice of luck as well. Definitely, footballing wise, there's no doubt that Real Sociedad were far the better footballing side. I think they had about 65% of the possession, and the way they pass and move, you know, they're a side that fully deserve to be where they are at the moment in fourth place. It's going to be interesting to see if they can just squeak across the finish line ahead of Valencia in the last three games. But I think over the course of the season, they're perhaps the team that deserve it the most of all the challenges for fourth place, simply on the football that they've played and the form that they've maintained over such a long period of time. One of the important things for Granada last night was that they went to the Anoeta and managed to take points from a team who, you know, since Atletico Madrid lost their home form a little after their lengthy run of unbeaten results, Real Sociedad have only lost twice at home this season, as opposed to Atletico have lost three, Valencia have lost three. Obviously, Barcelona and Real Madrid haven't lost at home this season. So on the home form, which tends to be crucial in La Liga football, because traditionally teams don't travel that well compared to some of the other leagues around Europe, they've done exceptionally well at home this season. Perhaps if they could have turned a couple more of the draws into wins, like last night, they perhaps suffered a little bit of bad luck that they've perhaps benefited from sometimes this season. You know, they hit the post twice. They should have had the game dead and buried. But I think it was Agüero that said after the match, us hitting the post twice gave Granada wings. And, you know, obviously Granada then threw everything that they could, obviously very direct, as opposed to the more fluid football of Real Sociedad. And in the end, right at the death, they got the equaliser. I think, obviously I'm going to be slightly biased, but I think Granada deserve to get something from the game simply because of the effort, the persistence, the fact that they didn't give up and they kept battling. But it, obviously a crucial point for Granada. 2 points lost, I think, for Real Sociedad. And that's going to make things more interesting into this last three games up at the chase for fourth place. Obviously, for Granada, they've still got a bit of a cushion above the bottom three. They're now 4 points safe, if you will, above Deportivo. The big game this weekend for them now is against Osasuna, who you could see as another direct rival in the relegation battle, who are also on 36 points. So, you know, it's a crucial game for both those teams.
Well, the winner of that one, Heath, will almost certainly be out of it, won't they?
You'd pretty much say, looking at the points at the moment, obviously, if Granada get 3 points or Osasuna get 3 points, depending what goes on elsewhere, Deportivo particularly, you know, I think whoever wins that game is going to be safe. Neither will want a draw. So it's going to be a big, big game for both teams because they could effectively clinch the survival with 6 points left to play for. So, you know, a draw isn't going to be good enough for either team.
Yeah.
But I think probably Granada now, they've hit the form at the right time. After they'd had the training camps, got the team together, got them working together on and off the pitch, you know, strengthened the relationships in the squad, after the bad run that they'd had. They turned things round. They were unlucky against Valladolid, that they didn't get a win. They got the two wins then against Espanyol and Malaga, two big, big wins. Last night was a big, big draw for them. Anything really, perhaps, against a team like Real Sociedad, where they are in the league, was probably going to be a bonus. I think all eyes were on the Osasuna game. So last night, as well as it being an extra point towards the tally, it was also a big, big morale boost to get something from the game so late for not giving up. And that'll bode well going into the last three games for them, definitely.
Well, Osasuna, of course, who you play next, and just sitting above you, I think, on goal difference, is it? Or their head-to-head yeah. record. 1-0 victory over Getafe. Arribas with the goal on 74 minutes. They've started improving a little bit as well, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, Osasuna, obviously, they got thumped at Valencia the other week. But getting the win against at home to Getafe was a big, big plus for them. But I think the biggest surprise for Osasuna this season is the home form. Normally, they're one of those teams that nobody likes going to play them at their place because the fans are always behind the team. It's quite an intimidating place for teams to go. This season, they haven't had that. So, you know, whilst they're going to be one of those teams that never travel as well, the home form is going to be sufficient to keep them keep the heads above the water. But this season, they haven't had that. They've picked up at home recently, and that's been crucial for them. So they've been picking up draws and wins of late, and I think like Granada. I mean, obviously I'll be hoping Granada beat them on Saturday, but I think Osasuna have probably done just about enough, and will do just about yeah. enough in their remaining games. You know, to keep their heads above water. They've got Sevilla at home after Granada, and then they've got Real Madrid away. Real Madrid have nothing to play for, so, you know, you're not expecting the same sort of Real Madrid that they're going to be facing if they were actually playing for something. So, you know, they've got two interesting games along with the Granada game. I think a point or two will be enough for them. But all the teams down there at the bottom, Deportivo, they're still in with a chance. Zaragoza, they're still fighting just about. Celta Vigo is going to take a miracle with two games to go for them. And Mallorca, the same thing. They've got to win all their games. But I think this weekend is probably going to shape a lot of things.
Superb. Joe, bringing you in just below Granada. Zaragoza, with their form at the moment, they want to get relegated, don't they?
Yes, they definitely do. It's bizarre, isn't it, with Zaragoza, because never normally see a team go on such horrific runs as they do. They've, in the past three games, they've all of a sudden woken up out of this slumber that they'd been in for a very, very long time. They went as long without winning as Sociedad went without losing, almost. They went absolutely ages, didn't they, without winning a game. They drew a few, but they had that crucial game against Mallorca a couple of weeks ago. And to come out of that on top, and then to follow that up against Rayo, winning 3-0, they kept another clean sheet again, a tricky tie. You know, they had to travel to Levante, which isn't an easy place to go. And they've got another pretty tricky tie against Bilbao coming up this week. They were playing like they wanted to get relegated really, really badly. They now look to have decided, you know, it might be worth staying in this division for a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But they're in a lot of trouble. They're not out of it by any means. I think they're helped. Sort of helped greatly by the fact the teams below them are even more hopeless than they are, more than anything.
Yeah. Of course, this ended 0-0, Levante 0, Zaragoza 0. Levante are quite fortunate, aren't they, that this poor run of form didn't start earlier in the season, else else they'd be looking over their shoulders, wouldn't they?
Well, yeah, Levante, you know, they had the Europa League as well, didn't they? They did quite well in that. It obviously took a huge strain out on them. They now haven't won in 6 games, which is quite bad. But before that, they were on quite a decent run of form. And they kind of, once they got knocked out of the Europa League, I think they kind of looked at the table, saw that they weren't gonna, in any danger, really, of going down, knew that they weren't going to finish in the European spots, and put the sunglasses on, the deck chairs out, and kind of just thought that they'd float through to the end of the season. They've not really done that much since Martin's left either.
They've got a real goal scoring problem, haven't they? I think they've only scored 36, which is actually less than Deportivo and rock bottom Mallorca. So
yeah, they've got a real problem. You know, their sort of attacking options are, they don't have a plethora of attacking options. They've got Nabil El Zar, who I once saw score a screamer in front of the cop back in the day when he was at Liverpool. But, you know, he's a sort of a tricky winger, if you like. Aqua Fresca and Marty haven't set the world on fire either. Since Martins has gone, they've looked like they've just lacked a cutting edge, haven't they? And as I said, the deck chairs have been out, the sunglasses have been on, and they've just been floating towards the end of the season. I think that they need quite a bit of a rejig come the summer as well, because you're looking at Ballesteros and Juanfran, who are in that team, aren't they? And they are... how old are they?
37, 38, yeah.
Yeah, they're very much at the end of their careers, and they're two crucial players for them. They play pretty much every game, don't they? So I think they need to look at bringing through younger players from the academy, or sourcing players, be it on loan or in the transfer market, if they get a little bit of cash to spend. They obviously don't have the European football to entice players, which might prove a little bit of a problem, but they need to do something, because otherwise, I really do think they will be in a lot more trouble next season. If they don't add anything to that squad, then I can fully see them going down next season. I just think they need a massive rejig, a bit of investment, good dealings in the transfer market is probably the key. They might be able to get a bit of money, I don't know, for Dudka. Might be able to send him somewhere to Germany or back to Poland. El Zar might attract a bit of interest. You know, he's looked decent when he's played. He's not set the world on fire, but he looks decent. So, and Ruben Garcia is probably the one that, if they were going to sell anyone and earn quite a bit of money for, they'd probably sell him, even though they wouldn't want to, because they should be building their team around him for the next few years.
Superb.
I think one of the interesting things to look out for, because I don't think he's signed a new contract, has he yet? Juan Ignacio Martinez. If they keep hold of him, because he's done wonders when you look at the budget he's had to play with. Old Jim has done a fantastic job at Levante, but he's still not put pen to paper yet, I don't think, has he?
Do you think maybe he's done as much as he can with them?
It depends how much backing he gets to bring players in. But I think he would like to stay at Levante. He's quite settled there. Fans would love to see him stay, and the club would love to see him stay. But you know, as we're thinking around the different changes going on around, not just Spain, but Europe this summer, a lot of big changes at different clubs. You have to wonder whether he'd be tempted somewhere else. Yep. You know, you could put him possibly in amongst the list if he's a free agent in the summer. If you've got Malaga downscaling, we mentioned Caparrós as a possible candidate, but if you've got Malaga downscaling, you know, perhaps they might look at someone like Jim, as the man to take the reins at Malaga, do things on a lower budget, and perhaps with his European experience now, he's the man at Malaga. But it'd be interesting to see what happens. I think they've been in talks to time up for a longer deal at Levante, but you know, you wouldn't blame Martinez if he's sort of holding out a bit to see what happens in the summer.
Superb. Just moving down then into the drop zone, Heath, will stick with you. Deportivo could have got out of it if they'd have beaten Valladolid, and Zaragoza, of course, drew with Levante, but they didn't. Yavi Guerra scoring the only goal of the game in that one. Do you think that they've sort of run out of steam now?
I think it was a big opportunity lost at Valladolid, and especially with there was something like 5,000 Deportivo fans all packed into the Zuria Stadium there in Valladolid to back the team. It was a bit of a damp squib as far as the game was concerned, and perhaps you could perhaps say they bottled it a little bit against Valladolid, who have now done just enough to get themselves into safety and guaranteed permanence ahead of next season. Like all the teams down there at the moment, there's no easy games left. Deportivo have got the next match against Espanyol. Espanyol have got little to play for, so perhaps they can get points there in front of the home fans at Reza. Then they're away at Malaga. Malaga haven't been in the best of form of late. It'll be interesting to see how Malaga perform in that game. Deportivo definitely with something to fight for. Malaga, you know, has the morale bubble burst completely, or will they still be up for the challenge of trying to secure European football, depending on how the committee proceedings go for the challenge to keep into European football? Then Deportivo, last game for them, Real Sociedad. You know, that's a six-pointer for both teams, because Deportivo may still be fighting for survival on the final day. Real Sociedad may still be looking for points to clinch a Champions League place. So there's no easy games for them, but I think the best chance for Deportivo is going to come in this next match against Espanyol. If they can get 3 points, it's going to be all eyes on Zaragoza then, because I think Celta Vigo and Mallorca are pretty much dead and buried.
Superb. Joe, bringing you back in, just a place below Deportivo. Real Betis 1, Celta Vigo 0, Ruben Castro with the goal. If Celta Vigo don't win this weekend, they're down, aren't they?
Yes, they most definitely are. They've only got 2 games to play, haven't they, Celta Vigo? They've got to play. Is it Valladolid they've got this weekend, isn't it? So it's not a particularly easy game. They don't really look like winning. They went. They had a couple of victories, didn't they, against Zaragoza, who at the time, you know, if us three had gone on the pitch, we'd have probably beaten them when they were in that run and that rut of just not getting anything out of the games. They beat Levante as well, but, you know, they're really struggling. And to be honest, they look like a team that are going to go down. I don't necessarily think they should be in the situation that they're in, because they've got a decent squad on the whole. I think that if they go down, they're going to struggle to get back up, because they're going to lose a lot of players from that squad. They'll lose a lot of players.
Iago Aspas, he's surely going to leave, isn't he?
Yeah, well, he's one of many. You know, they've got Pranjic, who he's going to command a small fee to go somewhere else, you'd think. Iago Aspas is obviously, as you said, he's the obvious one. They've got Park, the Korean striker. He's on loan from Arsenal, if I'm not mistaken, so he's gone anyway. Kron Deli, the Danish international, isn't going to want to be playing in the second division in Spain. It's going to do his international chances no good, really. So they've got 4 or 5 players there that they're going to really struggle to keep hold of, and they're going to lose them. And then who do they replace them with? Because it's not very easy to attract players to a second division Spanish club that's just been relegated and showing no signs of going back up. So I think they've got a long way to go. They've got a lot of thinking to do this summer.
Super. And he finally, rock bottom of La Liga, and it's our last game in the review. Athletic Bilbao 2, rock bottom Mallorca 1. Adoritz and Fernando Llorente scoring for the home side, and Giovanni Dos Santos scoring for Mallorca. It'll be a shame to see them drop down to the Segunda, won't it?
Yeah, because it's always a nice trip over to the Balearics there. I think, as I said in previous podcasts, there was all the problems off the field that have contributed to the woes. Desperately unlucky on the pitch sometimes with Caparrós. And to be fair to them, they stuck with him as long as they could, which you had to respect. But in the end, they had to make the change. They've picked up some morale boosting results, but not enough really to get them where they need to be. And you know, saving a miracle, they're pretty much down. I mean, that was a key game for both teams, because with that game, Athletic Club Bilbao pretty much guaranteed their Primera status for next season. But now Mallorca have got it all to do. They've got Real Betis next. Betis challenging, obviously, for Europe. They've got Atletico Madrid away. Even though Atletico won't have much to play for come that penultimate game, you don't fancy them getting anything there at the Calderon. And then the final game, which is the best chance of points, is against Valladolid. But, you know, as I say, by this weekend, they could be down by then anyway. So, you know, they've got it all to do. They've got to get a win against Betis at home. There'll probably be a full house there at the Iberostar. You know, any chance, they've got to get 3 points this weekend. If they don't get 3 points this weekend, unfortunately for them, they're down. The problem is based on the assumption that they're down, can you honestly see Mallorca bouncing straight back up? They haven't got the finances at the minute. Like a lot of clubs, they've got debts. You know, unless someone comes in with some money to back the club, you can't see them bouncing straight back up. So it's going to be a long road for them, unfortunately, I think.
Superb, Heath. Well, there's still plenty more to play for at the bottom of La Liga, with the teams battling to survive. And, of course, Sociedad and Valencia battling for the final Champions League place, and the Europa League place is still up for grabs. We'll be back next week to discuss all the action. Big thank you to Heath Chesters. Heath, if people want to follow you, ask you some questions, where can they go, mate?
Just look for me at Heath ISF on Twitter, or if you want to keep tabs on how Granada CF are doing, it's Granada CDF EN. So just look for the English language Twitter of Granada CF.
Nice one. And Joe, the same for you?
Yeah, Joe, that's Joe _in_España.
Fantastic. Thanks to you. Thank you very much for both coming on.
Pleasure as always.
Good to speak with you both again. I'm just hoping that now there's not a sort of a bogey of me being back on the podcast for the Osasuna match this weekend after the run Granada had of late.
It's not back.
Fingers
on
crossed.
Why?
Yeah, or I'll be back on and swearing at you both. That'll be the thing.
You never know. Might be a lucky charm, mate. You might win 4-0.
Yeah. Definitely. Fingers crossed.
Superb. Well, that's the end of the Inside Spanish Football podcast, and we'll speak to you all again next week.